for this.
Yeah. Randy wants you to get up and go close all the windows.
Hey, could you fucking move, Tim?
I'm planning on it, right?
Tim, could you go somewhere a little quieter?
I have to get on my feet at some point today.
Yeah, hey, hurry up, Tim. Like,
second.
Is this Trevor? Trevor, can you hear us?
Yeah, so I was sticking my headphones in. I was trying to feed the dog, and I managed to spill a whole bowl of food. Lucky dog.
Do you need a minute?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, she's cleaning it up.
Lucky dog.
Nice. She looked at me like, the fuck am I supposed to do with this now?
Nice. Well, I hope this works, because I haven't – so I had a hard rule against doing – teleconference podcast interviews, because there's so much that goes into communication. You know, a lot of it's nonverbal, and it's just easier when I'm having a conversation with a human that's in front of me to kind of like pick up on certain things, where you can like give me those eyes that are like, shut up, I don't want to go there. You know, like I can pick up on those things, you know. That's a lot harder to do in this setting. But we're going to do it anyways. Let's see what happens.
3, 2, 1, see ya.
You're listening to the Baseline Podcast with your hosts, Randy and Brian.
So Trevor Thompson, welcome back to the Baselife Podcast. How you been, man? I feel like it's been forever.
Yeah, I mean, it's been forever since any of us have seen each other, let alone talked in this kind of format, right?
Yeah, yeah.
When was the last one?
You know, I didn't look it up, let alone re-listen to it, because I hate the sound of my own voice.
And me both.
And this week kind of got away from me. We were chatting last weekend when I was doing my morning routine. Yeah, sit on the toilet. And we just happened to both be awake in different parts of the world. Yeah, and then all of a sudden I blinked and it's this weekend. So.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of did the same thing. I had that conversation with you, and then I drove to New Mexico, and I was there for a little longer than I wanted to be, and then drove home. And I was like, oh, shit, I have to touch base with Randy because we're doing that podcast.
Yeah, what were you doing down in Mexico?
New Mexico. So,
New Mexico, sorry.
Yeah, so I was, yeah. I ordered a bed for my Tacoma, and it's built out of like aircraft grade aluminum and all of the wheel well space that you usually aren't able to utilize. What they've done is they've squared off a bed and then allowed you to have storage, pass through storage, all around the wheel well in the back, and it doesn't weigh almost anything more than a normal bed would weigh. It weighs like 50 pounds extra, which if you use a bed liner or anything else, you're already above that weight. So the thing basically weighs what I already had on the truck, but is way more usable, more secure. It's lockable storage the whole way around. And so I waited a year for this thing to get built, and they did the installation down there in Albuquerque, and it looks fantastic.
Very cool. Yeah, I think I saw some hinting to that on Instagram.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Nice.
Is this the kind of thing where the brake lights pop out and you've got storage down the middle?
No, so you don't even need the brake lights to pop out. So it has like LED brake light strips underneath, where you're thinking like the Dodge Rams do that, I think. But it's very similar to that concept, except it's the sides of the truck that have two doors on each side that open up. I'll send you guys some pictures if you want to see it. It's pretty cool how it works, and I'm pretty stoked to use it because I ski a ton and hunt out of that thing all year, so I really do utilize that kind of functionality.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, it's got quite the adventurous life going on, man.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to. I don't make a lot of money, but I sure do live my life.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's trade-offs. You're not doing 8 to 10 hours a day behind a computer, like, you know, sending emails and going to meetings.
I'm doing about, you know, zero.
Nice. Now you're based out of Salt Lake City now?
Yeah, so moved to Salt Lake. Oh shit, what is that? 4 years ago or so. And about the same time, I had started guiding up in Alaska, or learning how to guide up in Alaska for big game. I had really started getting deep into archery and bow hunting. And between the two of them, my lifestyle took a shift in a really positive way from having left the military to more outdoor activities. I got to open up my friend group and kind of gain a new family of outdoor people, which I'm really glad for, because that kind of got me out of the revolving door possibility of, you know, go out to bars, drink, hang out with the same people over and over and over. And you know, everybody's on their own sort of life path, but I can see with my personality that that could have become destructive.
That's cool, man. Oh, I'm glad you got it, found a, you know, an outlet for that. Tell us a little bit more about like hunting in Alaska and the guiding.
Yeah. So, we guide for mountain goats, which are bigger than you might think. They weigh about 330 pounds at the top end. So it's a big goat. Brown bears, that's like the Kodiak brown bears. And those are as big as you think they are. When they stand on their hind legs, they can be 14, 15 feet tall. They weigh 1,200 to 1,600 pounds. It's a big predator. And then we also guide for black-tailed deer, which they can be about the size of a large dog. But mainly I'm up there guiding for goats and bears. And actually I'll be up there in about 9 days to guide for bears. Yeah.
How long do you stay up there when you guide?
So I just go up for the hunts, and like a bear hunt is usually between 8 and 12 days in the field. So I'll fly up to Kodiak, which is an island off the south end, off the south side of Anchorage. And then from there, I'll go to my buddy's place, and then we'll go down to the seaport and fly on a de Havilland Beaver, which is a 55-year-old float plane that we utilize as like our bush plane out there in Kodiak, because almost everything is water access.
Nice. Yeah. It's pretty remote.
Yeah, just a little bit. You know, I mean, we had a client last fall that had a little bit of a hard time, and the poor guy wasn't quite ready for what was happening. It was about 18 or 20 degrees outside Fahrenheit, and it was snowing, and it had been for 2 weeks, or raining. And he was like, "Man, I just don't want to quit, but I can't do this anymore. And like, this is ridiculous. Like, is there a way that we can get out? You know, like, what if we had an emergency and press the SOS button on our inreaches?" I'm like, "Well, I'm your first responder. The Coast Guard won't come get us. It's blowing 70 miles an hour. So anyways, welcome to Alaska. You can't leave."
Yeah. Nobody's coming to save you.
No, that's the truth. And it really remains that way. And, it's a special place because of that. You know, you are everything. You know, you're the cook, you're the camp tech, you're the guide, you're the mom or dad, depending on how they're acting. Like, it can be a wild or frustrating experience, but it's always an adventure. It's very cool.
Do you have other guides with you, or how's that part work?
Is that like a ratio? So usually we'll only do like 2-to-1 at a maximum, because the guy that I guide for and with has a very particular set of clients. Our hunts are on the top end of price, and we have a very good ratio of success. So when people show up to us, they know that they're going to get a specific level of treatment. As well as, I'm an assistant guide, which is a license level in Alaska, and I can guide in an area that the master guide is also in alone. But usually we have two guides out there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool. So in this situation, was it the temperatures, or was it the amount of hiking, or just
Everything. Oh, it was kind of everything for that poor dude. I think he's from Alabama, and he got put on the hunt on short notice. He filled somebody else's spot. I just don't think he was ready to experience what coastal Alaska in November can give you, which is an ass beating if you're not careful.
I've seen Alone.
Yeah, I actually wrote that down as a question. I was like, when are we going to see you on Alone? What season is that?
Oh, man. I got called by their casting department, actually.
That's funny. No, I believe you, but it's just...
Yeah, it's the truth. And part of that is I know some of those guys. I know Jordan Jonas and Clay Hayes, two of the past winners. And... my first thing to do was I called them and I'm like, hey, what is this actually like? Like, give me a no shitter. And they both said the same thing. Like, how bad do you need the money? Like, oh, that kind of tells me a lot of what I need to know.
Yeah. It's it's a
wild experience, but pretty shitty.
Yeah. Yeah, what order of if you were to be on that show, what order would you do? Like, build your place, then find some protein? Ooh. Or like, what would your strategy be like?
Let's see. I'd probably do a semi-permanent shelter up against some earth, like pretty quickly, that I can then build upon, and then immediately start hunting.
Okay.
Cause like all those seasons seem to have the same thing in common, which is shitty area with okay amounts of game, maybe poor levels of game that if you get one, it will get cold enough quick enough that you can store it if you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And you're running out of energy. You're feeding off of your own tissue for the entire time. Mm-hmm. So food is a priority. You know, there's going to be water everywhere. So you'll be able to procure water. That's fine. Okay, cool. So that means I have 3 weeks before I no shit starve if I eat nothing. So legitimately, you probably have 7 to 10 days to find something big, which is doable if you put the effort in. And if you see Clay and Jordan, who won, both did that, and one got a deer, the other one got a moose, and they both made it. So the formula is there. That's as long as you don't get hurt.
Sure. Yeah. That's
and you're lucky. The game.
Yeah.
You get the spot with the game on it.
Precisely. You know. And that they said that too. They're like, dude, if you get screwed, you're screwed. And yeah, it's like a lottery. Like they just sort of draw straws.
Yep.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on you know, keeping a fire burning constantly versus not? Because that I've seen that burns a lot of calories. You know. And,
yeah, so frankly, what I would probably try and do if I was on that show is do a version of what like Arctic and subarctic peoples tended to do, which is have a like a punk wood fire stick or log that had embers or something in it that I could get a fire going again, but not have one going constantly.
Gotcha.
And I think there's actually a winner that he was not making much fire at all. He was just living in that manner. And he was kind of living that like sort of subarctic people version of life, which is you don't have to have a fire all the time. You just have to be warm. So a lot of that comes down to like how you're dressing and how you're eating and how much you're moving or not and what your shelter looks like.
Yeah, that's the last season Brian and I watched. It was a kid originally from Mexico that moved to Canada and got into survival. I'm blanking on his name, but yeah, he basically won on calories. Like
that's who I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
And like, and how like cool and collected he was, right? Mm-hmm. He's just like, look, I'm just going to make a shelter and it's going to keep me warm. And I don't need a fire all the time. I just need to be warm. Like that people get very sucked into these like inside the box thinking solutions as opposed to what do I actually need? All you actually need to survive, because all you need to live is shelter, food, and water. And I think a lot of the people that fail are either only focusing on one or they're just there to survive. there's a huge difference between survival, like there's been a number of those like SEER people on that show, right? Mm-hmm. Like SEER instructors. All they do is they survive and escape. That's all they're looking to do. So they're looking base level.
They're not looking to
like
live.
Jordan. Exactly. I think Jordan, that kid who won on the season you guys are talking about, and Clay, they're like, this is my new home. Yeah. And that's how they just went about it. Like, this is where I live now.
Yeah, that looks so cool, frankly, but it looks terrible.
Looks like a suffer fest.
Right? Yeah.
And that's kind of what they said. They're like, how much do you need the money, dude? We know you can suffer like enough to win, but do you really need that money?
Yeah, and you see some people that build like little almost like mansions and then just burn themselves out like with building too much house, so to speak. And
yeah, precisely. So,
Beaver fever got a couple of guys. Mm. We've seen that one.
Getting sick. Yeah. Getting sick's a big one. And I think that kid that won, didn't he talk about saying that in preparation for the year prior, he was drinking out of every creek and stream and river? And like, that legitimately works. I know it works because the bulk of the guides in Alaska don't use any filtration on any of their water ever.
Interesting.
Now that not ever. So almost ever. So if it's coming out of a stream, a creek or a river that they know is runoff or coming out of the dirt, coming out of some seep somewhere, they'll drink it straight up. And so do I. And almost all of them have only been sick one or two times over the course of 20, 30, 40 years of doing that.
Wow. Yeah, there's definitely something to that. I mean, that's data points there.
Yep. So that kid did a good job, like, thinking that through. And I do the same thing hunting up here. Like, I don't carry more than half a liter of water, like, ever.
Huh.
There's always a creek you can drink out of.
So how do you prepare for these kind of, like, 8 to 12-day, adventures up in Alaska?
Lots of whiskey. No. I prepare for it the same way I prepare all year for everything, which is I have a really good base level of fitness. I try not to get hurt, and I make sure that my gear is taking care of me. So it's the same shit that I was dealing with when I was in the military, which is like all my stuff is in good shape all year round. And that means my brain, my body, and my gear. So going on a hunt in Alaska is no different to me than going out for 2 days in the Wasatch here. It's just a time domain. That's it.
Nice. Yeah. What's the saying? Like, if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready.
Damn right. And that's the truth. And the longer you stay ready, the better you are at getting ready quickly and the less anxious you are about the task at hand, which makes you much more flexible, and it gives you so much more mental latitude to come up with solutions or see things in a way that aren't necessarily readily apparent if you're not focusing on the most basic task.
Yeah, there's like a level of like agility and like resilience built in that.
I think so. Yeah. And I'm going to like shamelessly plug the new company I'm working for, Protect. Using products like that is super efficient, and the ease with which that allows you to go through some of these physical activities outdoors is incredible. Like being able to get good night's sleep with like a rest or a sleep supplement, getting good hydration in your water with what we have is like a hydration supplement, like the entire range of those products. Finding products like that, you know, whatever it is, if it's like your boots or your socks or your backpack or your rifle or whatever, or bicycle, whatever the thing is, finding those things is part of staying ready, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thanks for bringing them up. Cause I wanted to ask you a little bit more about Protect. Like how did, I want to go two directions, but anyways, how did you get involved with these guys? And tell us a little bit about like what they are.
What is it?
Yeah. So, Protect with a K is a family of products that was started by Nick Norris, Tim Duba, Mark Healy as the founders. Mark Healy, the big wave surfer. And Mark and Tim and Nick kind of saw this spot in the market for nutritional outdoor supplements that was missing, which is how many liquid single serving packets have you guys ever seen for hydration stuff? And I mean true liquid, not gel.
Yeah. I mean, other than Liquid IV, that's gotten popular recently.
And isn't Liquid IV a powder, though?
Yep.
Yep. So we don't do powder. It's liquid. It's true liquid.
Oh, wow.
In the packet. And nice. The reason is, and they found this out over the course of 2 years, you need a industrial 24-blade blender to keep that in solution.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, because I've dabbled with a few of the they're not within reach right now, but some different like hydration powders and then gels and
yep.
gummies. Well, the gummies are those are more energy. The gels and
they usually are. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what they did is they're like, okay, how do we have a hyper clean supplement? Meaning like we're going to use organic or as close as we can get. Because there's all sorts of weird rules tied to, that label organic products in our stuff. And then, like, I can read the back of the box right now. It says potassium, magnesium, sodium, stevia. That's all that's in that hydration, which is cool, right? We're not using any extra fillers. There's no other bullshit.
None of those tosis.
And it stays. Fructose. Exactly. None of it.
Sucrose.
So, and our rest supplement was formulated by a doctor that's trying to help guys with TBI get some good sleep. It has no melatonin, so it doesn't dick with your hormones. It's like GABA, valerian root, L-theanine. That's it. So all of our stuff is sugar-free, and what they saw is that gap in the market is what they were filling with these things. We want things that are liquid, that with a liquid, you're going to have 98% absorption, and it's almost instant. So you put that, you can like shotgun it straight in your mouth. You're getting it right away. You're not going to waste any of it. So you take any of the competitors, name them. You named Liquid IV. There are other ones like Element. They're powder, right?
Mm-hmm.
Between half and 40% of that, you're just going to piss out. It's going to go right through your digestive tract, which is a shame. You're losing the ability to uptake that. It also takes longer for your body to take it in. It could cause GI problems. Our stuff was formulated so that it didn't cause any GI issues and that it was really quick uptake and that it was really efficient.
What's the shelf life on something that's already in liquid form?
Okay, so that's a great question. I can actually look at one of our packets right now. So I have a box in my hand that was produced last month. And the expiration is a year from now.
Okay. Now, more importantly, for someone like me and Brian that live in Germany, what's the international shipping situation like?
I can talk to those guys and find out, but I'm sure
we can put you on
stuff.
The spot. Like, I'm really intrigued by this stuff.
I honestly don't know. You can order it on Amazon.
Okay.
So if you guys can Amazon, it might actually be possible to get it shipped. If not, let me try and figure that out for you. I legitimately believe in the product. So Nick, Tim, and Mark are friends of mine, and I knew them for years before I started working with the products, before I started working for them, and was using the product for 2 years before I got hired. So I was completely bought in.
Wow.
They also have Reef Safe, certified organic mineral-based sunscreen that goes on oil grease-free.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. Like, the shit is child-safe. It's awesome. It's, like, the only sunscreen I'm willing to use at all.
Nice, yeah. Yeah, sunscreen's not too big of a concern in Germany. I think the sun comes out, like, once a week. That's awesome. I'm definitely intrigued. The sleep and the hydration both immediately like stuck out to me.
And the sleep is fantastic. So GABA specifically is something that males really do need. in our system, and getting it at night, the L-theanine, the valerian root, it just helps down-regulate like neural pathways, and it gets you to calm down and get to sleep instead of, say, like THC or melatonin, which are going to skip some of the cycles on the front end of sleep patterns. Mm-hmm. That you really do need for recovery. So this helps get you into a state that your body naturally should be getting, but in this hyper consumption based, tons of information world we live in, it's difficult for people to do that. So this, it's an aid. And because it was formulated for people with TBIs, it's very brain specifically, healthy.
Nice. Yeah. I've tried just about everything you can think of to sleep better. And there are certain substances that just don't help. You might sleep, you might think you're sleeping better, but yeah, like you said, you're skipping certain parts of the sleep cycle, and then
or you're screwing with your hormones or whatever. And there was a doctor that came up to our booth at, not a trade show, but like an archery event. And we were giving product away. His name's Bill Queel, and he was looking at our stuff and asking very pointed questions as a, you know, a doctor kind of would. And then we told him some of the stuff that was in that rest supplement. He keyed up and immediately he's like, cool, I'm on board. That's it. That's all I needed to hear was what formulation was in that thing specifically. I'm on board with you guys. Let's do this. Like, I want all the products immediately. So for people that will listen, that's a guy with a medical background specifically that he is disenfranchised with the medical practice right now, and how it's basically pill sellers, and he wants people to be able to fix themselves. So this is a guy, he's in incredibly good shape. He's like 70, and I would put him up against almost anybody that I know. So he is focused on his body and helping people keep their bodies as healthy as possible, kind of like a Peter Attia. And he is actually friends with Peter.
Dude, I'm staring at that book right now. I listened to Outlive Peter Attia, and I bought the hard copy so I can go back and, like, you know, highlight
so,
stuff.
So Bill has a book called Dying to Save You.
Sorry, I'm writing that down.
Yep, Dying to Save You. And it's under William S. Queel, Q-U-E-A-L-E. He's a super good dude, really bright. And he is very similar to Peter, and he and Peter are friends.
Nice. Yeah. I'm almost ready for another book. I'll add that Dying to Save You in the show notes, along with a link for Protect. Do you have like a Trevor code or something like that that you'd like to tell people about?
I don't, okay. But I think we do have an LEO, first responder, military discount. We do wholesale. It's still a small company. They're doing great, but I work for them. Like, so I'm like their spokesman type guy. I also help run ambassadors and athletes. So feel free to just reach out to me on the Instagram if you want to. And that's probably the best way to go about that. And then I can point you in another direction. But yeah, going on from what I was saying before about them formulating that to fit a niche, they took that time to make it work. And I think the products work. And I hope you guys get them and feel the same way. But we've had a whole bunch of professional athletes, doctors, people in that hyper bodily focused area, try the products, and man, the worst things that we've heard about it is either, I don't like how the packaging is, or I don't like this flavor.
Okay.
And if we're not hearing negative stuff about how it acts, reacts, or your body reacts to it, that's a good sign.
Yeah. Yeah. What the package looks like. That's a funny thing to get feedback on.
Precisely. But people will find something.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole, I don't know, performance is such a neat topic, and it takes so many different, you can go down so many different rabbit holes. Like, cause I remember at one point, like, you were doing super low, like slider down base jumps, and like that's a, and there's its own type of performance when it comes down to the pack job and like what you do with the pens, and then but then there's like performance when it comes to big mountain hikes and like big wingsuit jumps. There's all this, you can go down so many different paths depending on like what your what your niche is or what your interest is.
Oh yeah, and like I'm seeing that now. Like I just ordered a new rig and canopy, and I have a new another new wingsuit on the way. In order to be more efficient and do some jumps that I want to do.
Nice. Nice. Is that, are you going to be back over this way at some point?
Yeah. Actually, I was there. Well, we were there in August.
Yeah, I thought you were in like Italy. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we were. Were you there, there with Chuma? No, we were there with Scotty Peterson, Patterson, Peter Saltzman, Robbie, that crew.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, we fly the Phoenix flies.
What did you think of the Dolos?
That was the second time I'd been there. And it's like, why? It's almost a why go anywhere else for so many different reasons. Like, Italy is so cool. The food's great. And man, like, if you know what you're doing in a wingsuit, like, Sassport is just as good as Brento.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't actually done SAS yet, but we have done.
I mean,
Dolos, but yeah, the some of them, anyways. I don't know.
Yeah,
I drank a lot on that trip.
It's it's like SAS is so. I mean, it's 300 meters to the first ledge, and then it just drops off to infinity.
Brian, did we do? Did we do SAS per day?
No. We did like Pala 2, Pala 1. That was when we had the. Yeah, champagne base.
Yeah. Yeah, we've only done we've only done it with helicopters. I don't know what any of the hikes are like.
Well, I'll tell you what. So the Pala's hike is long. Mm-hmm. I have done that a couple times. It's gorgeous, but it is a long ass hike.
Yeah, the older I get, the more I appreciate the hikes. It's weird. It's weird. I used to be like, what's the most efficient way to get me to the exit? Like, how can we do this as fast as possible? Like, money doesn't matter. Like, let's just make it happen. Now I'm like, no, I actually really love the hikes. Small group of friends, you know?
I completely agree. Like, I hiked up that Pala. We jumped Pala 1 with Robbie Edo, Vincent Artinall, Mike Hitchcock, and man, it's just so special to like, you're interacting with everybody. Everybody's taking the time that they want to take. You stay together, you hang out and bullshit, you know, you're able to process what you're about to do. It almost feels like a different sport to do gondola or tram access, right? Like you get there and you're like, okay, 20 minutes later, you're jumping, or 5 minutes in the case of SAS, where you get off the tram, you walk over, gear up and go. I really like having to process these things on the front end and then going and performing them, because you very well could have something exceptionally scary happen or die. So it's good to be there and absorb the entire thing. It's a whole holistic activity. It's not just using gravity to get to the ground.
Right. And, you know, jumpers listening to this know that there's way more that goes into the a base jump than like what you see on Instagram or TikTok or whatever. But
yeah.
You know, because you see like the sweet line or the long flight or whatever. But there's so much that goes into it, like you know, the hiking and the preparation and the jokes and
The bullshitting.
Yeah, and that almost gets me in a better place. You know, like spending the time with people and it's not quite a flow state, but just being present and being there and thinking about things. Sometimes you're not even thinking about base jumping at all, frankly, but still somewhere in there, like I'm processing things that could potentially like lead to keeping me alive or somebody else alive, or, you know, it's all just sort of part of the process.
It's, it's probably a similar reason that I have become to very deeply enjoy Dawn Patrol backcountry skiing. It's such a similar thing where you spend hours getting to where you're going just to spend minutes at the most to get down.
Yeah, no, that sounds a lot like a big wingsuit flight, like that you work all day for just to get,
You know, and maybe you'll do two that day.
Yeah.
And it's so much more about, you know, making jokes with the guy that forgot a sock or something in the morning, or talking halfway up the skin track or the hike about, oh, you have a new job, or, oh, yeah. You know, what are your kids doing? Or, you know, didn't you have problems with your truck? And like, how's that going? And like, I would so much rather do all that and then turn around than not have that and be able to do the ski run or the jump or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Like this year. So I haven't put a wingsuit back on since my accident in 2018. But, so 18 got hurt, 19, nothing, 20, nothing, then COVID, 23. So 21, I did a couple jumps. Is that right?
I think so.
I did a couple jumps in 21, a few in 22. And then this season, like I was pretty consistent. I don't keep a logbook, so I can't tell you how many I've done, but, mostly valley jumps. Yeah, well, there's a few in Talon. Tim was there. Tim, you still with us? You've been awful quiet.
Yeah, I'm still here. I did a few as well in Talon. Just a few.
And then, yes, a little bit more jumping here in Lauterbrunnen, but I'm wearing my old, like, two-piece tracksuit. Nothing sexy. It moves me away from the wall, but like I've had so much fun just going on hikes with friends and getting a little bit of separation and then opening safely and landing on the ground. It's been, I don't know, it's like getting back to like actually, well, it's not even really my roots. It's back to my roots in Lauterbrunnen and jumping, but
yeah,
you know,
it's like getting back to the why you want to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been fantastic, but it's simple. But yeah, it's those little things, you know, the most inconsequential, you know, high nose jump, but I was with like great people that I haven't seen in a while and we got to catch up and it was a great summer. So.
Yeah. See, and that's what you want to have happen.
Yeah.
You know, like when I was with those guys in August, like they didn't care if we did two jumps, four jumps, six jumps in a day. They didn't give a crap. They're like, oh, we're all here to just hang out. And we like jumping and that's it.
Yeah, but the guys that you were jumping with had thousands of base jumps. So it's it's not, the numbers are irrelevant.
It's also true. Yeah. You know, nobody keeps a logbook. Yeah, it's like, well, whatever. I don't know how many I have.
Yeah. But yeah, it's about the moment. But you know, even with those jumps, there's a performance aspect to it, you know, like, especially if you're hiking up there, because you still have to have like, you know, the energy to fly a wingsuit, which is in and of itself kind of, you know, has its own, well, each suit is different, but most of them are, you know, you got to flex certain things, point toes, you know, you still have to work. You have to be able to like, do work after you've already done the work to get to it, you know? So,
yeah, you know, you have to be thoughtful. And, I mean, some of the jumps are requisite turns, things like Piz de Lake, like that's a requisite 90 degree turn, period. You are jumping and in 3 to 7 seconds, you better be turning to your right if you're flying your suit or you're not going to make it out of this little valley. That doesn't make it difficult, technical, or scary as a wingsuit jump, a modern wingsuit jump. It's just, it's not, period. But if you're an idiot, or you're tired, or you're not being thoughtful, something bad will happen.
Yeah, for sure.
So performance becomes something you're thinking about the entire time. And so, you know, like, how fit are you? What did you eat? What time of day is it? Are you hydrated? Are you in pain? Are you thinking about other stuff? Like all these things need to be, they can't just be in the back of your mind. They have to be somewhere floating around you all the time. You know, you shouldn't be anxious
but you should be afraid of consequences.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you got to constantly looking out for what could kill you.
Yes.
I suppose it's like that when you're hunting in Alaska as well.
Yeah. But by and large, what will kill you hunting is what mostly killed people for millennia, which is the weather. The weather doesn't care. And the weather won't let up. And the weather doesn't have any emotion.
Weather's gonna weather.
It's gonna do what it's gonna do. Like, if you know what you're doing, you can scare a bear away. You can get rid of a predator. Scream all you want. It's not gonna stop raining.
Yeah, I was looking for one of those Goggins quotes for when the weather conditions are bad, but I lost it. And I'm not funny anyways.
You just have to yell. Just yell at the weather. Just scream and it'll come across about right.
You don't know me. Yeah, did I see that you made your own bow recently?
Yeah, let's see, about almost 2 years ago, I went to a guy, Corey Hawk, in Nebraska, and learned how to make a bow out of a single piece of wood. I thought that was super cool. It's fun to shoot. It was very interesting because that bow specifically is based off of a 7,000-year-old design. Almost exactly like millimeter to millimeter, it's the same as they would have made in your region that you're in right now. It's like 6 or 7,000 years ago.
That's cool.
That's wild, right?
Yeah. How'd you get the patent for that?
Yeah. And that's something else that's cool. Every bow that's been recovered has been measured and documented. So you can literally make a copy of any bow from 10 to 20,000 years ago till now.
Huh.
Uh-huh. And so I learned how to do that. And then I was going to try and take another course with him, just a one-on-one, because I really wanted to make specifically I asked him about making a plains style rawhide backed bow. And he said, oh, that's kind of complicated. It takes some steps. You'd have to come out to the house. And if you would be willing to take a one-on-one course, like that'd be cool. And he ran me through that. I didn't end up doing it because of time and some other work requirements. I just couldn't make it work with him. So I said, well, fuck it. It's not that difficult. I did it the one time. I'll just take my time and try and do it again. So I bought some wood staves, which are air dried pieces of wood that are specific kinds of wood. Got a couple of the tools, which it's not complicated. You need like one or two rasps, one or two draw knives and a handsaw. And that's all you really need to make a bow. Huh. And that's probably a little shocking, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess cavemen were making bows, then we should be.
Damn right they were.
All the tools we have now.
Mm-hmm. And so that's what I did. I got the tools, I put them in a box, made myself a bench to shave the bow, and I carved a couple bows in the garage. One of which I used and am still using out hunting this season. To hunt elk, deer, bear, whatever. And I actually shot a big bull elk in Oregon with it. So that was a freaking crazy experience to shoot a 1,000-pound bull elk at 25 feet with an arrow that had a steel tip on the front. And the arrow shaft is made out of cane that I got and wild turkey feathers on the back for fletching. The bow is made out of Pacific yew. That I carved in the garage with nothing but hand tools.
Wow. Did it die?
Yeah.
Did you get it?
Yeah, it's dead.
how good did it taste?
Well, elk always tastes good. I didn't recover that bull, so that was like a sad experience. We spent 2 days looking for it, but it was like the thickest stuff I've ever seen, like thicker than anywhere in Hawaii, thicker than any jungle I've ever been in. We think that maybe he piled up under a briar thicket or something that we just couldn't see, but we spent the first day looking, second day looking, third day it started raining, and then by the end of the third day it was pouring rain, and it didn't stop raining for a week. So sometimes nature gives you what you need, what not what you want. So I didn't get to recover that bull, which is sad, but it's not like it goes to waste. There's bears and coyotes and wolves in that area, so they ate.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Still sad.
What's of all the animals that you've like hunted, what would you consider your most rewarding hunt?
You know, doing that hunt in Oregon with a bow, with that self bow that I made, is very close to the top for that. I'll have to put, I shot an elk last year with a longbow that I didn't make, but it was the first really large game animal that I'd hunted completely alone with traditional archery equipment and harvested an animal. So I did start to finish everything. That is probably the most rewarding for me. It was like a 2-3 year old cow elk, female. I was just stoked to shoot anything at all. And man, is it wild to like be able to perform that action start to finish like that, have all the skills necessary. And I just have to thank everybody that, you know, taught me how to shoot a bow, taught me how to hunt, taught me how to clean animals, all of it. Cause I was able to do everything, and we've been eating her all year. It's just, it's very special to be able to still participate in an action that humans have been doing for, you know, they're not sure how long archery equipment's been around, but it's 30 plus thousand years. Like it's wild, man.
Yeah. When I can't imagine you buy meat at the grocery store very often.
Never.
Yeah.
Like seriously, that's not hyperbole. Like I just don't. Yeah. I can almost count on one hand how many times I've bought any meat protein from the grocery store in the last 2 years.
Wow. Nice. Now, did I see that you're also, they're like short notice, like animals get hit by cars or something, and then you guys are able to you know, save the meat?
Yeah. Is that... So we have something called, and actually most Western, most states in the U.S., yeah, most states in the U.S. have, as long as you have a hunting license, they have a something called a salvage tag. Some states call it roadkill. Usually they call it salvage. And it's kind of up to the person to determine whether or not they really want to go get it. You just call your Department of Fish and Game or Department of Wildlife. They make sure that all your information is good, and they will issue you a salvage tag. And so about four weeks ago, my friend Mark, who moved here recently-ish but has been hunting in Louisiana his whole life, that's where he's from, so mostly just whitetail, saw a elk that had just been hit by a car at like 4:30 in the morning. So at 6 a.m., I get a text from him. Hey, are you awake? I'm like, yeah. He goes, I just saw an elk get hit. I got a salvage tag from Division of Wildlife. Can you come help me? I'm like, oh my God, it's freaking early. Yeah, sure. Like, let's go do this. And so we were able to salvage a bull that otherwise could have only been eaten by, you know, vultures and coyotes. It had only been on the ground 2 hours. So, I mean, I've left elk and deer longer than that, actually hunting them myself. So it was still hot on the inside of that thing.
Was it next
pulled
to
all the meat off?
Was it next to the wrecked car that probably
no,
exploded?
No, I guess the car was able to drive off. Which, man, they must have been hammered, because that's a big bull. Like he probably weighed 700 pounds. but we were able to salvage like 200 pounds of meat.
That's awesome.
Yeah, for free. Like it's just effort. You just have to show up and do it and know what you're doing. And that's a scenario where it's like, okay, cool. I have all the skills that all these other people have given me their decades of knowledge that they were given the same way. And I'm able to go and perform this action and then have meat in the freezer that I eat all year because that's all I eat.
Yeah, I'd like to do the math on like living over here, like what it would cost to get to Alaska plus all the equipment and then get back to Europe with the meat.
Well, you could rent all the equipment and all the bullshit. Like all that stuff can get given, used, or whatever, including rifles. Right, which we have had clients that have come from Europe and can't or don't want to transport their own weapons.
Oh, it's a nightmare over like guns don't exist. That's one of my America. I go to America to shoot guns.
Which is funny because I'm like, it's funny you say that because like I mean I have like a 30-30 like leaned up against the wall in my closet and like my AR is sitting on a chair over here. And there's a pistol like floating around somewhere in this living room, but. It's like hilarious to hear it.
Yeah.
I talk to my Canadian friends the same way because they're like, oh, where are all your guns? I'm like, I don't know. All everywhere. I mean, I have a rifle hanging up over the door.
Where are they not? Yeah.
It's
a little different over here. Yeah.
But you know, the math could work out. It would be more of a experience than a getting lots of meat type of thing. Your best bet would actually be to just join a hunting club and, you know, go shoot a red stag in Scotland or go to Sweden and maybe try and shoot a moose. That's an option.
You're not saving any money doing that.
No.
No. Then you could drive it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Be a long drive. Yeah. But yeah, that's cool.
I've done it, but I drove to northern Canada and shot a moose.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much that you know that goes like, it's just you know saving money on meat and like having a freezer full of something that you killed yourself. That sounds neat and all, but like I mean, and you know firsthand that when you take someone on a hunt, there's so much more that goes into that, and there's so much. More that comes out of it, I guess, than just, you know, a freezer full of meat.
Pulling the trigger on an animal is the least important part of the entire thing to me. And guiding people on those hunts and helping, I've helped some people that have never shot four-legged animals. And everything else on the front end and the back end is so much more enriching to their lives and so much more important to really think about and talk about and be part of than killing that creature as the only thing to think about. Now that's the most important decision they're going to make because you're choosing to end the life of another living thing, but it's participating in the entire front and back end of that circle that matters. And that's what makes doing that okay ethically to me.
Absolutely. Yeah, everything you're saying is like totally pinging off and I know we've both read this book, but The Comfort Crisis. Mm-hmm. which centers on a hunt in Alaska, but then he goes down a bunch of different, he uses various aspects of a hunting trip to make other points on, you know, adventure and getting outside of your comfort zone
I think he does a great job at it.
Yeah.
I think he did a great job at that too.
Yeah. Yeah. That one really, stuck out for me. Like and that sent me down. Let's see. It was like, I read Comfort Crisis and then Outlive. I think I read like right after that or right before.
And then, the new one, Scarcity Brain, is pretty good too. I'm about, 2/3 of the way through that.
Scarcity Brain?
Mm-hmm. Michael Easter just released it.
Oh, okay, nice. Nice. So that's the author of Comfort Crisis. So,
yes, it is. And actually, a couple friends of mine are like named by name in that Scarcity Brain book because he does deal with some more hunting. He deals with some more difficult processes that people are engaging in on purpose. In order to be non-consumers or thoughtful consumers in a world that is driven by nothing but consumption.
Nice. Yeah, that's, he really pinged on some things like that in Comfort Crisis. I'm excited to know that he's got another book out. I'm definitely going to put that on the reading list. I'll add a link to it here in the show notes.
Hell yeah, I read a little bit.
What else are you into?
Oh God, you mean besides the like backcountry skiing, hunting, base jumping?
Shooting. You're like an anime guy or something.
Oh no. let's see. Actually, so next month it's going to print. I co-wrote a cookbook with a friend.
That's cool. When were you going to bring that up? Shoot, man.
Yeah, so that'll be getting released probably maybe Thanksgiving-ish, like for sale for real. We'll do some pre-sale stuff coming up. I wrote it with Aaron Blevins.
What's the name of it?
So the working title right now is Playing with Knives.
Okay.
And it's all focused on world type cuisine with a hard focus on game meat, that can be substituted. So we wrote a lot of stuff with halibut, salmon, axis deer, moose, elk with pretty decent, supplementations. Or substitutions, and there's a ton of like shareable food, relatively clean. It's like how we eat and why we eat, as opposed to like, oh, this is carnivore, this is vegetarian, this is keto, like, you know, all that sort of stuff that can really get people in the weeds about like, oh, I need to like do this and this, and I'm going to stress out about my food. And we eat relatively clean, and that's it. We just like to eat. So that's how we wrote this book.
Nice. Yeah. Well, when, once you have a title and a method of being able to like purchase it, I can update the show notes with the information and hopefully steer people away from Amazon purchases. Cause they just, I hear selling books on Amazon is not great. So
yeah. It can be a little tough.
Try and purchase direct, like the most direct method.
And we'll have some purchase options like that.
Nice.
Yeah, same thing on ProTec. I was able to go.
Oh, yeah.
The Amazon site, you can get it shipped to CMR out here, but they didn't have it on. They didn't have the sleep packets.
Oh yeah.
So I just went straight to the website and bought Randy. Yeah. Since I'm Randy's sugar daddy now, bought Randy some sleep packets.
Yeah. Now Brian's. I had misplaced all of my cards and my ID, and then the day
sure
after I finally replaced them, and the very next day I fucking found them. I was so
misplaced.
So yeah.
Oh, I forgot to bring my credit card to the bar. Dude.
Yeah.
But Brian's also support crew in my little whatever I'm doing, this Iron Man challenge thing. So.
Fuck yeah. How's that going? How's the training going for that?
So far, so good. I'm about 3 weeks, maybe a month in. But he had to like, so I turned my spare bedroom back into a gym. And so the spare bed is in his spare bedroom now.
We're all involved at this point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh God.
It takes there's a lot of people helping in various ways.
We're all running.
Right. Yeah.
Nah.
I don't know. It was like, it started as just like, oh, I'm just going to run a marathon. And then I was like, well, the Jungfrau looks fun. And then, yeah, that happened. And just a few days after that, my buddy, you may know Marco. He's a base jumper, Marco Regina.
Regina. Yeah. I thought you were going to say Milanese.
Nah, he convinced me. He ran an Ironman earlier this year and is working on his coach.
Ah.
He's working on his coach rating. So he has a method he's following, but he's using me as kind of his first guinea pig.
Guinea pig?
Yeah. So I'm getting free coaching. We have a Training Peaks app where he loads up the workouts. All I have to do is figure out when and where I'm going to do them. And the pool one gets, you know, I've figured out the pool, or at least one of the pools around here. So yeah, I hate having to figure out what to do for workouts. And I also hate, people yelling at me when I work out. And this is like the best of both worlds. Like my coach is in Switzerland and,
physically see him.
Yeah, he puts the workouts in the program. I open the program. I figure out where I'm, you know, if I'm going to ride to work or if I'm going to, you know, hop on my bike trainer or run before work. There's a nice place to run that's sort of on the way to work. So it's just, it's like a little puzzle that, you know, to little things to figure out throughout the week, and then prepping bags, you know, like my run bag or my swim bag, there's a lot of prep that, and the more organized you are, the less time you waste, you know, with workouts. So, but
yeah, no, I completely have seen that on my end of doing either hunting or some of these long physical efforts, like some of the ski tours that we're doing, we're out for 7 hours, 8 hours.
It's a long day.
Can be.
But yeah, you know, if you're ready for it, then it's probably fine. But yeah, I'm stoked to try out this the hydration, because that I'd say two
I
things
on the hydration.
The sleep one. Nice. Okay. Well, the sleep's really, golly, it's so important with recovery. Like, as you know, like.
Yes, it is. It's the thing that you can, the thing that works with the rest stuff that we have is it helps you get the most out of the sleep you're able to get. So if you're only able to do 6 hours, it's going to help you get the best 6 hours that you can get.
Nice. Yeah. I don't struggle to get 8 hours. You know, I'm 40 years old and no kids, and, 9:30 rolls around. I'm like, I'm telling, like, there's nobody to tell me I can't go to bed. You know, it's like, like all the things that, like, as a kid, like, I hated going to bed early. I hated vegetables. Like, those are all like my favorite things. Yeah, it's going well. It's, I really don't know what I got myself into, frankly. I'm just an idiot, but at least I have good friends that are helping me where they can.
Well, I'm sure somewhere around hour 10, you'll figure out what you got yourself into.
Right? Yeah, but it took me 6.5 hours to get up to run the Jungfrau marathon. It was like 16 miles of rolling up hills and then 10 miles of just up.
Where does that, so is it all up?
So it's all relatively up, from Interlaken to Lauterbrunnen and then down the valley and then back to Lauterbrunnen. From Lauterbrunnen up to Vingen was probably the worst part. That's where I saw the most people started tapping out there and go walking the wrong direction.
I mean, shit, man. Like, just seeing it in my head, and I've been there enough times to see it. Like, yeah, I could see why that would suck.
It's not, you know, in Lauterbrunnen to Vingen, when you're starting Lauterbrunnen, and if you just have a base rig or if you're just walking up, it's not that bad. But when you've already run from Interlaken, like, because you're already at about mile 16-ish when you start going up. And
it's like about when you're going to bonk.
Yeah. Yeah. But I was actually happy for the change in stride because I was already taking kind of short steps and my hips were getting a little bit tight. So like I was happy to be like hands on knees and just like trudging. I was like, okay, I've been here in Lauterbrunnen many a time. Like, this is what you do.
I can do this.
Yeah. I've been trudging up these mountains for a decade. So, and I don't even have gear on my back because I just kept telling myself, oh, you're just going for a hike with your friends. You're just going for a hike with your friends. and then, yeah, eventually I got there, but yeah, it was what it was. But the only thing I really got out of it, I guess, is that I'm not scared. That was my first marathon and now I'm not scared of the marathon distance. Because I figure most marathons, I'm not going to cover that. Like, it was 7,000 feet of elevation gain. So
no, and if you're pretty fit, most marathons you're going to be finishing in maybe just over half that time. So
right, I don't even want to put a number.
The time domain's a lot too.
Yeah,
exactly. But like the time domain's a big deal too. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, 6 hours on your feet is a long fucking time.
Yeah.
On your feet.
Yeah. Well, and to be fair, like, I didn't even know the actual distances of an Ironman when when I started.
Oh God!
When I started thinking about
He's like, I did a marathon. I can do an Ironman now.
Yeah, I was like, I mean, it can't be that bad, was it? And then I looked it up, and I was like, oh, 112 mile bike ride.
Exactly. Like, oh, is that 100K? No, that's 112 miles.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never actually ridden a bike that far. I think 100K, which is like 60 miles, is my...
It's like 62.
Yeah, that's the max I've ridden a bike so far.
Zero to hero.
That's okay.
I got 8 months to figure it out.
It's not too bad. Like, I've ridden a couple centuries. I mean, my only suggestion would be to, like, spend as much time in the saddle as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Because that'll kick you in the nuts.
Yeah. What sort of and I keep going back and forth on bike things. Like, I'm not gonna buy a tri bike for my first one. I just can't throw the money.
Don't do that.
But I have a nice gravel bike that's pretty light that I think I can make some slight mods to make it good enough.
More useful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess the only mod that I would say that might help would be, like, some of the, what are they, like, I can't remember the name of the actual producers, but the, like, vibration-reducing stands for the saddle and the vibration-reducing handlebar mounts can really help you, because if you're not, like, a professional cyclist or a hobby cyclist, like, you're not on a bike every fucking day, whether that's a trainer or a bicycle, the vibrations will fuck your knees, elbows, hips, shoulders, wrists up. They just can. So
yeah,
those things exist. It's worth a thought.
Yeah, I'll look into those. That's the first time it's crossed my radar. I definitely notice in my elbows a little bit. There's usually some soreness on the longer rides there.
But yeah.
Yeah.
No, I have some on my gravel bike, so I can take pictures of it and send it to you.
Nice. Yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah.
Before we go, I wanted to ask about the whiteboard. I'm a big fan of your whiteboard. and so I was hoping you could just maybe tell some people about what that is.
So I have a, I don't know, 1 foot by foot and a half little tiny whiteboard in my basement, in my 10 by 10 basement gym. Like, I do all, 90% of those workouts are done in a 10 foot by 10 foot space.
Wow.
In my house.
That I didn't know.
Yeah. Yep. I have an assault bike, a bike trainer, a GHD machine, a half dozen kettlebells, and all the other weights and everything else. They're in that space.
Very cool.
Randy's got at least a 10 by 10 in his spare bedroom.
Yeah, right?
He can get more stuff.
Yeah.
Go
ahead.
So I had most of that equipment before COVID happened, so none of it's new to me. I started occasionally posting some of those like 4 or 5 years ago maybe, and one of the guys I was working with at the time was like, dude, I bet people would like to see what kind of programming you're putting together because you're not going off of a book. You're just making this shit up. 90% of those workouts I just make up off the top of my head, just FYI. And usually they're day of. I'm like, how do I feel? What do I want to do? What do I want to keep training? What am I looking for in 6 to 10 months? Because if you feel good now, if your training is paying off now, it means you did something right 6 or 10 months ago.
So, interesting. Yeah, I've actually thought about that concept. That's
if you're being consistent. If you're not being consistent, then I can't really tell you a thing, but if you're being consistent, it's probably about 6 months before you're really going to see true change or results, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a kind of how I'm forming my workouts. And so I started writing them down, and he said, hey, you should probably just start cataloging those things. So I started doing it on Instagram, and now there must be like 1,200 workouts on there. I don't even know, that are just cataloged, all of them. I save them all, and I usually work out 5 to 7 days a week, or do something physical 5 to 7 days a week. Right now, a lot of the focus is on that kind of zone 2-ish, 90 minute to 2+ hour workouts. I'm going to kind of transition into winter uphill ski mode, so the stuff's going to get longer and lower in lower intensity.
Mm-hmm.
I just keep posting them because if it helps just one person get better, then I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah, well, that's the neat thing, like with the interwebs, like you just never know how many people you're going to touch or reach or who's keeping close tabs on that kind of thing. But because I love seeing the whiteboard posts. I won't lie, I haven't actually done that many of them, but I'll pull pieces, you know, I'll pull aspects out of some of them. But because like I said, I don't like doing my own programming, so that's why I find the whiteboard pretty interesting.
And obviously, like, I'm cool doing my own programming. But part of that is I know exactly what I want to do and I know exactly why I want to do it. And I have the ability to do it in my house,
man,
which really makes life easier, you know, for me saying, oh, everybody can go do these. Like, yeah, well, not everybody has a gym in their house,
right,
or parts of the gym. But the reality is everybody has a spare 20 minutes, 30 minutes in their day. And if you're telling me you don't, you're either in prison or lying. Like, there's no fucking way. Everybody has 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
100%. Absolutely. Yeah. And 20 minutes broken down, if you account for 8 hours of sleep and 8 hours of work, like going to work, then you have eight hours to work with. And 20 minutes comes down to like 1% of your available free time. And if you can just make yourself 1% better every day. Yeah, it's,
and like, you give me 20 minutes of your day, I will break you. I promise. And then there's little stuff.
You wouldn't
stuff,
need
like,
20 minutes for me.
but then there's like little stuff where it's like, are you able to get a walking desk for your work? You know, or, you know, people are like, oh, well, I need to like watch my kid as they're watching TV. I can't be like working out. Like, okay, cool. That's fine. Get a walking desk treadmill and put it in your living room and walk as you're watching your child watch TV.
I mean, you can fling a 2-year-old.
There are ways to do this.
Yeah, yeah. Fling your toddler around like a kettlebell. It'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of ways to like manufacture some physical motion that people don't really think about because they're unwilling to think outside of the box that they're in, or they're just not forced to. And maybe me posting some of these workouts helps people be like, oh, this guy's super fucking consistent. None of it looks crazy. Some of them do, but none of them like, as a macro look at the whole thing look insane.
Cool. Well, Tim, Brian, thanks for joining us. Tim, you got anything? Tim's on all the drugs and fell asleep.
I just woke me up. I was on that sleep supplement.
Perfect.
He's already on the Protect sleep supplement.
See, it works.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I've been just with the recent incident, putting a lot of work into my own fitness. I've just been lucky because of how far I've been knocked down. I've been able to see like progress daily. So spending 3-4 hours just working on movements and putting together, and just it makes a huge, huge difference in growing, not just because I got knocked down, keeps my mental health in a better spot as well. So all the encouragement that I get from Randy, Brian, T, and Laura, and everybody else also helps as well.
Hell yeah. And just remember, nothing matters as much as consistency.
Yeah, there's really something to be said about like just those incremental like daily investments. Just micro, like I forget what the term is, but it doesn't have to be a lot, but as long as it's consistent, you'll see the payoff over time.
It's what the studies say, and it has to do with everything from breaking or making good habits to physical effort and fitness, which is the sum of the parts is way more than each part individually. So if you're trying to do each part individually at high intensity a few times a week, month, year, you are never going to get as much out of it if you do less than you would have done individually, but as a sum consistently.
Yeah. Yeah. You put it way better than I could have.
Well, I get asked about it on a regular basis, so I'm glad to be able to put it out there in a way that I think makes sense.
Nice. Well, Trevor, for one more time for the listeners, where can they find you, and what do you want them to know? You know, like, where can they find you, and then, you know, like, tell us a little bit more about your sponsors.
Well, in a couple of weeks, you can find me on the Skin Track in Salt Lake City if you live here, going up the mountains. And if you want to look online, I have an Instagram, and it's just my name, trevor.p.thompson. I really only work with Protect right now, and then I support a couple different companies because they make really good shit. Things like 30 Seconds Out, which is a buddy of mine's company in Colorado. He's a vet. And then I'm working for Protect Products, and you can find them at Protect Products online with a K. You can order direct to consumer. It's a whole bunch of veterans making really, really good products, and we give a shit about them. So seek them out. If you like it, order some more. If you don't, let us know why.
Nice. Yeah, thanks, man. And thanks for – it's been great, like, catching up with you. You know, I feel like we're always sort of, like, keeping like, little tabs on each other, like, you know, thanks to the social medias and stuff. But but it's great to, like, actually talk and, like, catch up and, you know, see what you're up to.
Yeah, I'm stoked to hear from you guys. I appreciate you taking the time, you know, this late in the evening. I know you're about to go to bed because you were saying, like, you know, it's like,
right.
So I get it.
tomorrow's my rest day, so I'm,
Perfect. Yeah,
but well, I'll still be in bed by like 9.
Cheers and have a drink.
Yeah.
Speaking of which,
fuck, Sober October.
Whatever.
Yeah, no, I didn't do it because of Sober October. I did it because, Oktoberfest happened at the end of September, and I was like, I drank basically a month's worth of alcohol and was like, yep, you know, it's time to just take another
clean
break.
Up.
Time to take a break.
Just dry out a little bit. It's fine. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah. So it's been good. But there's an entire shelf of whiskey staring at me though.
Don't listen to it.
Well, Tim, Brian, thank you guys for joining us. You
know? Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good hearing from you.
I'm stoked to hear from you guys, and hopefully we can try and jump or do something together here soon-ish. It's been years.
Yeah, yeah. If you end up back across the pond, you know, give us a little bit of heads up. You know, we can be somewhere, you know, just give us a little more heads up than Ben did. He like messaged us saying, oh, I'll be there Thursday. And I'm like, bro, you give me 24 hours. He's like, no, that's 2 days from now. And I was like, it's not 2 days from now where I'm at, like, because of the time difference, you know, I was like, I mean, we still got to hang out. It was great. But,
yeah, you guys did a half marathon together out of nowhere.
Yeah. Ben found out I was running the Inferno half marathon, which is, it starts in Lauterbrunnen and goes up the other side.
All the way up to the Schilthorn.
Yeah.
Up the
Murin side.
And
he was like, wait, you're running by yourself? I guess I should run with you. It's only a half. It'll be fine.
He's like, I can do that.
Yeah, we both finished. I mean, he slept in his car the night before, and then like met up with us for coffee, and then decided to run a half marathon. It was literally one of the dumbest things I've ever seen him do, like in a non base jumping situation. But
I bet he was okay, but not the next day.
Yeah, yeah, no, he seemed fine. We had a nice evening, like, but yeah, I just couldn't, like, that's the kind of bro, like, you know, Ben is.
I agree. You know.
He's got a half marathon at least in the tank.
Yeah.
Just at any given moment.
Off the couch. Just boom.
Off the ground.
Yeah, literally. He slept on slept on the ground next to his car. But,
damn Navy SEALs.
Yeah. But cool. All right. Well, I am the king of slow goodbyes. So before we get dragged into it.
It's dinner time.
Yeah.
I am
thanks
not.
Again, Trevor.
I appreciate you guys having me catching up again, and enjoy some good dinner. And I'm going to go hop in my sauna.
All right.
Nice.
Well, thanks again. This has been a Base Life podcast. We are out.
Ciao.
All right. If you want to know more about our guests, just check out the show notes. And if you want to give us some feedback or reach out to us, you can hit us at baselife2014@gmail.com, facebook.com/thebaselife, and on Instagram, we're at base.life. All right. Thanks.
Good night, Steve.
All right, well,
sleep tight.
This was, yeah. Angel.